I'm Chuck Reese, and I am the editor-in-chief of SalvationSouth.com, and I host the Salvation South podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting. This is the second episode of our special two-parter looking back on the most notable Salvation South commentaries aired by GPB Radio in the year 2025. This next one is from November, and it's one of our favorites. When the Atlanta hip-hop superstars Outkast were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame earlier this year, it was more than just a celebration of the immense talent of Antoine Big Boy Patton and Andre 3000 Benjamin. I believe it was a jubilee for the city of Atlanta and a Southern musical revolution that spread around the entire world. If you listen to me here every week, or if you follow the Salvation South podcast, you have probably heard me talk about the magic that happened in Memphis, Tennessee, and Muscle Shoals, Alabama, as soul music was created in the early 1960s. But the biggest revolution in Southern music in the last four decades happened right here in the city where I live, Atlanta, GA. Watching Outkast be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame reminded me of that. The soul music I grew up listening to was tremendously important in shaping Southern and American culture during the Civil Rights Movement. But the Southern hip-hop that began in the 1990s in a basement in East Point, Georgia, has put an undeniable imprint on the culture of the entire world. Outkast's first album, with its amazing title, Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music, came out when I was 33. Now, I had always been a voracious consumer of new music, but despite all the noise in the music press about Antoine Big Boy Patton and Andre 3000 Benjamin, I didn't pay attention until their third album, Stankonia. And I remember walking around my neighborhood with one of those, what did they call it, a Discman, clipped to the pocket of my jeans, listening and thinking, what is this stuff? I had never heard anything like it. I remember being glued to my television on the 15th of November in 2003 when they performed Hey Ya and I Like the Way You Move on Saturday Night Live. What a spectacle. And when Big Boy and Andre's fellow Atlantan, Donald Glover, welcomed them into the Hall of Fame, he said this.
Outkast didn't just represent the South, they redefined it.
Glover's words were not at all hyperbolic, nor was his next statement.
They turned each album into a new planet, a new home for people who felt like they had none.
And here's the thing, by the time those albums came out, I was not in the target audience at all. I was a white guy in his 30s. But somehow, I felt welcome on Planet Outkast. And when they reunited in 2014 for three shows in Centennial Olympic Park in downtown Atlanta, more than 20,000 people each night, I was there too. And here is the vibe I remember feeling. It was a celebration for all Atlantans, ATLians, to use the language of Planet Outkast. I had never felt, and doubt I will ever feel again, such massive waves of pride in my home state's capital city, and pride in the fact that, to borrow Andre's immortal words, the South did, and still does, got something to say. Please come visit us anytime at SalvationSouth.com. This year, we celebrated the 249th anniversary of the ratification of the Declaration of Independence, the 4th of July. Although we currently live in a time that has an uncommon amount of political division, I believe Independence Day does give us all the chance to find a few things that everybody can hope for. In this commentary, I talked about a few of my simple hopes for the holiday. This is the week when Americans celebrate Independence Day. anniversary of the ratification of the Declaration of Independence. On the 4th of July in 1776, delegates from the 13 colonies came together at the Second Continental Congress in Philadelphia and declared this country independent of Britain and its king, George III. Now, if all one knew was that fact, one might expect the 4th of July to be a solemn holiday, a time to gather and recite the most famous sentence of that declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, I have certainly, on various 4ths of July, given those words some serious consideration, as I'm sure you have. But when I remember the Independence Days I have celebrated in my life, the focus has mostly been on the last three words of that sentence, pursuit of happiness. The 4th of July just tells us to go outside and take a few deep breaths of fresh air. It tells us to watch a parade, to go to a ball game, to eat entirely too much food in the backyard with our people. The 4th of July tells us to pursue happiness. And in that spirit, I have cobbled together a list of 4th of July hopes for myself, but really, they are 4th of July hopes for all y'all. Here goes. I hope you eat a hamburger or a veggie burger, if that's your thing, hot off a charcoal grill. And I hope the person who cooked it for you is someone you love absolutely, whom you could not imagine life without. If you don't eat a burger, I hope you eat a slaw dog. Man, I love a slaw dog. I hope, if you're a baseball fan, you get to hear the crack of a wooden bat. I hope that deliriously happy children run circles around you. If you live in a small town, I hope there is still a parade, even if it's just a few local farmers taking their tractors for a spin on Main Street. I hope you stay up after dark and watch some fireworks explode in the sky. And I hope you say, ooh, ah. Not because you're expected to, but because it just comes out. And I hope you do remember the words in the Declaration that come before pursuit of happiness, especially that all created equal part, because those words encourage you to love your neighbor as you love yourself, and to prove it by handing them a slaw dog over the backyard fence. Happy 4th of July to all y'all. I hope you'll come see us at SalvationSouth.com. This next commentary originally aired in June. The Associated Press had recently published a story on new academic research about the ongoing disappearance of Southern accents in our region. I don't object to such stories because they are true, but I do think curiosity is rising about what exactly we lose when we lose those accents. I just saw an Associated Press story with this headline. Is the Southern accent fixing to disappear in parts of the U.S. South? And this happens every couple of years. Professors of linguistics at various colleges publish research papers claiming that how Southerners have traditionally spoken is disappearing, that our idioms, our dialects, our slang terms are fading away. This current story from AP cited new research showing, and I quote, the diminishment of the regional accent among black residents of the Atlanta area, white working class people in the New Orleans area, and people who grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm not surprised because since 1970, the population of the South has grown tremendously. People from all parts of the nation have moved here, bringing their accents with them. So I have no quarrel with stories about the Southern accent disappearing because they are true. With this recent story, my only quarrel is with the headline writer. I suspect they threw in the fixin' to because they thought that would be cute. But the Southern accent has been so frequently used to make fun of our people that I don't think it's appropriate for a venerable news organization known for its objectivity to publish stories with headlines like that. So to that headline writer, I want to say, what you wrote, that ain't cool. I cannot, however, quibble with the substance of the story. Our accent is disappearing. But although young people in the South might be less likely these days to say they are fixing to do something, I have noticed lately their increasing interest in learning more about the way Southern folks have historically talked. Every day or so, I check Reddit to see what's going on in the subreddit that's dedicated to Appalachia. And not a week goes by when I don't see a post with a title like Appalachian Aphorisms from someone asking to learn more about the phrases they heard from their mountain ancestors. Phrases like, right quick, as in, how about helping me out with this right quick? Or used to could, as in, I used to could eat 3 hot dogs at one sitting, but I can't no more. Or do what now? Which is the standard reply when someone says something that makes no sense whatsoever. You cock your head, squint your eyes, and say, do what now? Now, it can be fun to catalog the disappearing pieces of Southern speech, but I believe that how our ancestors told us stories matters much less than the substance of the stories they told. So I have an idea for Generation Z Southerners. If you have grandparents or other relatives whose accents are thicker than yours, sit down with them. Take the smartphone from your pocket and film or record your conversation with them. Ask them about things that happened in the South when they were your age. And please visit us at SalvationSouth.com, where we tell stories about the South, what used to happen and what's happening right now, every day. Welcome back. We're looking at the most popular Salvation South commentaries aired by GPB Radio in 2025. This next one is from July. The 4th of July weekend also brought news of disastrous flooding in Texas and the Carolinas. The deluge in the Texas Hill Country was one of the deadliest American floods in the past 100 years. I always marvel at how Southerners in communities that are hit by natural disasters tap into something at the heart of our region's culture, hospitality, to rally and help people. And not just to help with immediate needs, but to help people heal when the storms pass.
When I was a child in the Appalachian foothills of North Georgia, I often heard people ask my father if he could make it somewhere, you know, to dinner at somebody's house or to some community function. And when Daddy got such questions, I often heard him reply this way, I aim to, good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. But now it feels like the creeks and rivers rise nearly every day, and they swell far higher than they used to. On the 4th of July, when folks in the Texas Hill Country just wanted to eat hot dogs and watch fireworks, the Guadalupe River rose over 22 feet in just 2 hours, then swelled so high the flood gauges failed. As I write these words, over 100 people are dead across 6 counties in the Texas Hill Country. At Camp Mystic, a summer camp for girls, floodwaters killed 29 campers and counselors. 10 remain missing. The next day, a tropical depression came off the Atlantic Ocean and made landfall in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, then brought massive rainfalls up through central North Carolina. The streets of Chapel Hill, one of my favorite towns in North Carolina, look like rivers. I read in the Texas Tribune about a 65-year-old woman named Kathy Perkins, who lived alone with her dog, Marley, in Ingram, Texas, on the Guadalupe. She lost her home and is staying in a shelter in nearby Kerrville. She talked about crying in the night, not for her own losses, but for the girls from Camp Mystic who were still missing. Perkins told a reporter for the Tribune, "You just want to say a prayer, but then you wonder if they're even still out there to be prayed for. There are just no words." No, Miss Perkins, there are no words. But there are things we can count on in such situations. The South is a divided land these days, they tell us, but I can guarantee that in Texas and the Carolinas right now, folks are coming together. Disasters bring Southerners together more reliably than potluck suppers. The disasters will become more frequent as climate change continues, and as the political disagreements show no signs of abating, one might reasonably wonder if folks will stop uniting in the wake of disaster. But I do not. Why do I remain so certain that the rallying, the coming together to search for the missing, to feed and shelter the survivors, to hug the necks of the grieving, will continue? Because no matter how tortured we allow our heads and hearts to become, there remains inside each of us a primal urge to extend grace to our neighbors who suffer. And I know we all yearn for the day when more of us remember that impulse after the disasters have passed. Y'all come see us anytime at SalvationSouth.com. We're the Southern family you wish you had.
We've just about reached the end of our year-end retrospective of the most popular commentaries aired by GPB Radio in 2025. We've only got one left to go, and it's a deep one. As editor-in-chief of Salvation South, I spend almost all my time thinking and writing about the American South. But sometimes my mind starts wrestling with far bigger questions than what we Southerners read, listen to, or eat. This leads to frustration, but sometimes to a good lesson.
I spend most of my time thinking about life in the American South. Humans make community, and community makes culture, and the culture of the South is the thing that fascinates me the most. But as a Texas songwriter once sang, my mind's got a mind of its own. And sometimes it decides to think bigger than it has any business thinking. On those days, I ask myself, how is it that my life feels so big to me when I know that I'm just a little speck of dust on the windshield of the entire universe? Now, if you ask yourself that, you're not alone, and you never have been. The question has occupied philosophers and theologians forever. The Stoic philosophers believe human lives have meaning if we can learn to see ourselves as part of the natural order and learn that while we can control certain pieces of that order, we must accept what we cannot control. And of course, many people pray to God for the wisdom to know the difference between those two things. Now, Christian theologians see that natural order as divine, ordained by God, and believe that every human has their place in this divine oneness. But often when I weigh what this philosopher said against what that theologian said, I get all tied up in knots. I get frustrated, and figuring it out just seems impossible. Then I remember that I get some of my best lessons about big things from reading small things, like a poem. The magazine I edit, Salvation South, just awarded our first annual New Poets Prize, a competition that was open to any poet in the South whose poems had never been collected and published in a book. The winner was a writer from Kentucky named Emma April, and I want to read you a little piece of one of her winning poems. It was called Before Breakfast, A Few Impossible Things. Emma has two kids, a boy and a girl, and she begins her poem by remembering how her daughter used to tell her, "I'm big," when she was comparing herself to her brother, and then say, "I'm tiny," or "I'm a kitty," when she was loving being small. Emma then writes this,
When I try to explain to the kids where the dinosaurs are or where they aren't, not any longer, the world spins away from me, drenched in the gray, washed out, watery smell of futility, our blip of existence on the timeline, barely a fraction of the Cretaceous. And I agree with my daughter, Kitty, baby, we are big, we are tiny, impossible to believe, impossible to hold. Emma's poem reminds me that, yeah, we are small and we are big. We're whatever we dream we can be, as long as we remember how to look at this big old goofy world through the eyes of a child. You can read all of Emma Aprile's award-winning poems at SalvationSouth.com. That wraps up part two of our year-end retrospective on the most popular Salvation South radio commentaries of the year. If you like what you hear, please scroll down our podcast feed to hear all of my commentaries from almost 4 years of working with Georgia Public Broadcasting. You can also listen to the Salvation South Deluxe episodes, a series of longer shows that go deeper into topics of Southern interest, like this one, on the history of the U.S. Colored Troops, where we bring to light the struggle, resilience, and enduring impact of African-American soldiers in Southern history.
They saved the United States of America. And, like, I'm going to profess that that is something that should, in my opinion, be championed.
Or this one, which is all about Southern music in this century, where we got to know a new crop of Southern musicians who are taking their deeply rooted cultural influences into new territory, defying every expectation of musical genre and subject matter. Be sure to give these episodes a listen, and don't forget to leave a review wherever you get your favorite podcast. Those reviews really help us out. They help us spread the word. Finally, as always, you can visit SalvationSouth.com 24 hours a day for more Southern stories than you can shake a stick at. We have nonfiction, journalism, essays, fiction, poetry. If it's the written word and about the South, or even if it's the occasional short film, you can come to SalvationSouth.com to watch and to read, and we hope, enjoy. I'm Chuck Reese. Have a happy new year. We'll see you soon.